Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to the Baseball America Podcast. Baseball America, bringing you baseball news you can't get anywhere else for more than 35 years. Now it's time to talk baseball.
Welcome everyone to another Baseball America Podcast. JJ Cooper and I just are tired of talking to each other and not recording it. So we decided to keep on doing this and share the gift with you. We have a guest this afternoon.
Put gift in quotation marks.
Oh, it's a gift. It's the only gift I have to bring to you. I got no frankincense or myrrh. This is it. So... but Matt Blood always brings out the random God references from me. So back when he worked here and now here on the podcast, Matt, now the 18U National Team Director for USA Baseball. Welcome back to the Baseball America offices. We won't make you crawl through any locked any ceilings today. But welcome back. Always good to have you here, man.
Yeah, it looks good.
Yeah, we have a few issues from where you were up on the wall. Some Matt Blood articles up here from watching Ethan Martin get taken deep by Eric Hosmer. That was the defining moment of your
That was basically tenure. That was probably the best high school game I imagine that you saw.
That was one of the greatest high school games I've ever seen. Yeah. You know, even through all the scouting, right? Even through all the scouting years, but to see that battle between Ethan Martin, which I was kind of like his coming out party on the mound, to see him perform the way he did, punch out Eric Hosmer in the first inning with 96 miles an hour. And then Hosmer got him later with an absolute laser to left center field off the scoreboard. And I think Ethan Martin threw like 137 pitches that day, which was brutal. But he was electric, and Hosmer was great. But people probably don't realize who else was on the field at the time. I mean, Devin Marrero was on that team. Castellanos was on that team.
American Heritage.
Yeah. Adrian Nieto.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, J.C. Salburin. There were other guys who played D1. I mean, it was a very talented group of players.
Well, Matt's a young guy, but Matt has seen a lot of baseball. Matt interned with the San Francisco Giants. I remember you telling me stories about playing catch, long toss with Brandon Crawford, I think it was, or Pablo Sandoval. Yeah. When he was throwing left-handed and right-handed.
Yeah, Pablo could throw 90 with both arms. That was that was in Salem.
Salem Kaiser, right?
Oregon. Yeah, Brandon Crawford was with the 2006 national team.
Okay,
a college national team. I worked for USA Baseball as an intern in 2006.
Intern with USA Baseball. Intern with the Giants. Worked with North Carolina's team when you were undergraduate assistant.
Yeah, junior and senior year.
College. Yeah, 2006 and seven. Right, or was it seven and eight?
Six and seven. Andrew Miller was the ace of that staff, and I was blessed to get to watch him pitch all summer.
Point is, Matt's been at this for a decade and seen a lot of different kinds of talent. And after working the draft here with us for a year, scouted with the St. Louis Cardinals for 6 years, and now working with the 18U national team. So, Matt, that a little bit of your journalism background, your on the field background with U.S. with both as an intern and working with Carolina, scouting background with the Cardinals. Which of those skill sets? How did you bring those skills to USA Baseball and having to administrate the team, but also evaluate and help pick this national team in a year where it sounds like the talent level was extremely high?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, the job, at least the way that I took it, was full service. You're everything from the secretary to the travel secretary to the farm director to the scouting director to the GM, and actually even doing some bench coaching as well.
Wear a lot of hats.
Yeah, you wear in this role, which is I wasn't expecting it to be as rewarding as it was. Getting to know a lot of really great baseball people, getting to be around and get to know some of the most elite talent that I've ever seen, and getting to represent your country. Ultimately, the honor, you don't really understand what it means until you do it. And everybody says, oh, it's a great thing. Well, it is, and it's even better when you actually do it. The kids see that. The coaches see that. It's just a real special thing to be a part of. And for me personally, being from the beginning of the process in January to the end of the process in October, seeing everything that went into putting ultimately 20 players together and four coaches, it was really, really neat, you know, to be a part of and to experience.
And I mean, you know, like I said, you took the job in January, so this is your first year without a draft.
Yep.
But it sounds like you made up for that by making up your own kind of draft board. Basically. And bringing a draft approach to selecting this team. So like that process from January till Tournament of Stars in June, which is the supposedly the start of kind of the on-field portion of the selection process. What are you doing from that January to June? How are you picking out
and
those
players? This year it was January to June. Next year would be really June to June. I've already begun the process for next year's team, and I'm treating it very similarly to how an amateur scouting staff would. You know, I'm seeing events, I'm talking to college coaches, I'm getting recommendations, I'm writing my own reports, I'm getting reports from other people, and I'm compiling all that information, and I'm creating depth charts, and deciding, is this guy a no-doubter, or is this guy a probable, or is this guy a maybe, or a no? And you put all the information together, you make your depth charts, and you decide, okay, we have enough room for this many catchers, this many first basemen, on and on and on, and you make your selections that way. And then when you get to the Tournament of Stars, you're there evaluating them. And the way I handled the Tournament of Stars scouting meetings was just like a scouting director would. I've been in 8 draft rooms in my career.
I forgot you were in the Rays.
Yeah, I was with the Rays in one of their draft rooms as an assistant, as an intern, and then 7 times with the Cardinals I did it, and saw a lot of different methods for how to handle a draft room, and I tried to pick and choose the good ones and tried to stay away from the bad ones, and ultimately I felt like we had a pretty good process in whittling it down from the 108 players that we had at the Tournament of Stars down to the 40 that we took to trials. It's a little bit different than professional scouting because we are looking for the players that are going to help us win in the next 3 months, and not necessarily who has the highest upside at the major league level. So there were highly talented players that didn't even make our 40-man, and I'll be the first to admit those guys are probably going to go in the first round, and they very well may have big careers, but from what I saw and from what our staff saw, they probably weren't going to help us as much as the other guy that we chose in Mexico this year.
And if I didn't mention it before, October 9th, gold medal, U.S. beat Cuba 6-1, so mission accomplished.
Mission accomplished.
When all was said and done. I mean, really, that's you had this process that you you know, brought to USA Baseball and that you were able to bring in this year. But ultimately, it's a results-based business.
Yep.
That's what you mean. You're going to be judged on that gold medal, really, aren't you?
No doubt. You know, if you win, good job. If you lose, then it's
what the hell?
Yeah, why? You know what happened, and you need to do better next year. So that's the goal, is to put together the absolute best team that you can to remove as much possibility of losing as possible.
With that, one thing on the process with that, so you get, I mean, obviously you've got TOS, then you've got the trials, you set the team, you head down to Mexico. How much do you know about your opponents when you get down to Mexico? I mean, is it something where you're scouting there, or is there much that you can, before you get there?
You don't know much before you get there. You may be able to talk with some international scouts and get a feel for which of the teams is going to be more competitive. We were the best team on the field tools-wise by far. That doesn't always translate into wins internationally. You also need the best team that plays together, you know, and buys into playing like a team and not just showcasing their ability.
Right, which is tough because these are guys who have just come off of a summer where that's not what they're doing.
It's showcase circuit for the most part, but we try to build that from day one, that this is not a showcase. This is a team building exercise where you're going to learn how to play the game the right way and do all the little things. So to answer your question, though, about the other teams, we knew that we had the best team, and we knew that if we played well, we were going to be fine. We had power pitching, and we had athletes with power and speed and skilled defensively. So we knew that if we came together as a team, it really didn't matter what the other teams were going to throw at us. But yeah, we picked up information on teams as we got there. We realized, you know, that Mexico was a talented team as well and could play the game pretty well. Cuba always is that way. I think Panama was down a little bit, and we went into thinking that Panama was going to be one of the best teams, and we threw, you know, Hans Kraus at them right away, and the game wasn't really competitive, you know, so you learned a little bit about them there, and you knew that Nicaragua was going to be a scrappy group, and they sure were. They took us to the ninth inning, and we were losing in the ninth, which we really should not have been, but, you know, they battled, and we were fortunate to come back and win that game.
That was a nip-and-tuck game all
the
way.
It was. I mean, our depth is just something that the other countries can't compete with, at least not in the Pan Am games, and we'll see, you know, next year in the World Championships. But
I was going to say next year.
Yeah, I mean, we pull out arm after arm after arm, and other teams, you know, once they get into their bullpen, whether it's throwing strikes or just quality of stuff, it just diminishes, so we can wear a team down.
This is a tangent shock, I know, but you know, I always hear this when I talk to Eric Campbell, the college national team. I've heard this at the professional level with a lot of, whether it's Premier 12 or these kind of other tournaments. How is the approach of the U.S. hitter compared to the international hitter? Because it does seem like the biggest advantage the U.S. has is depth of arms and depth of power arms. But in international play, the American hitter, the amateur hitter, is geared almost too much for power, mm-hmm. and doesn't quite often have as advanced approach. Again, you didn't see, say, Korea or Japan this year.
Right.
But compared to the other teams in the Western Hemisphere, how would you grade the American hitter's approaches? Was it a little bit more raw, a little bit too power-oriented, or were your hitters able to make adjustments to seeing a lot of off-speed stuff that they saw?
Right. The off-speed stuff was the big problem for our hitters that weren't quite as disciplined. I think we did a pretty good job of preaching, you know, lay off the breaking ball, especially when it's down in the zone, because it's never, you know, if it starts down, it's going to stay down and get even lower, you know. And we have, you know, some players that couldn't quite grasp that, and some players that could.
And it's a short window to grasp.
It is. We have from beginning to end about 28 days, you know. So our players are just bigger, faster, and stronger.
Right.
And that's what was startling to me was that the other teams, they couldn't handle the velocity that we were throwing at them. And if we were throwing over 90, they weren't going to hit the ball real hard. I was afraid. I mean, you weren't ever afraid that they were going to hit the ball out of the yard where, you know, we were big and strong and could. And that was the big difference that I saw. Now, in the approaches, international hitters have good approaches, mm-hmm. I feel. I mean, so do the U.S. So I just think that they were overmatched by our...
That was less of a gap, it sounds like. There's less of a gap in the...
It was less of a gap, but the strength, there was a huge gap.
Right.
Like our strength and power was overwhelming from
Tristan
what I could
Casas
tell.
Can mishit a ball and still drive it.
He's the youngest guy on the team. He's one of the youngest guys in the tournament, and he hit more home runs than all the other teams combined.
Right.
You know, and you know, we hit six as a team in those eight games, you know, and just not many extra base hits were hit by other teams.
Four against the Team USA pitching. Four extra base hits.
Right.
So all doubles in the U.S. in those eight games. 23 doubles, 3 triples, 6 home runs. So
Jared, I had a disadvantage. I know Jared, you know, Jared Kelenic had 5 extra base hits himself, if I remember correctly. You know, so
and another guy who's not even draft eligible next year.
Right.
Young guy who's one of the younger guys in this.
And like his physicality is just an example of what I'm talking about. I mean, the other countries don't have, you know, those type of tools, at least not what I saw this time. You know, Cuba had a guy who, center fielder, who was strong, who could run and had some arm strength. You know, a guy that just from my scouting hat, I'm looking at him and go, okay, that guy's got some tools that are going to play, but it's just one guy.
They had like one pitcher who really brought it right.
Well, they had a left-hander who was a good pitchability guy, But we didn't see anybody else from their team that, that threw hard. And Mexico had a guy who came in and pitched really well against us, who was low 90s with a good break and a good changeup, and he threw strikes.
Pedro Leon was the Cuban center fielder, correct?
Yes, yes, right. Yes, exactly. The other thing that was unfortunate, I mean, you always want to win, but Cuba unfortunately had a couple, I think three or four guys that defected while they were in Mexico, and that's just not good for the spirit of the game. And
right.
I think only one of them was really a contributor on that team, but still, I mean, it's not what we were hoping for. We were hoping to play them at full strength. And
right. You want to test yourself against the best.
Yeah.
Historically, they've been the next best.
So. Yeah, and they were there. I mean, I think Mexico and them were a very even match. Mexico had more professional players, at least down in Mexico. So it was interesting to watch Mexico play. They all acted like they were 10-year veterans in the major leagues, like the way that they handled themselves. But their talent and tools weren't that caliber.
I mean, Julio Urias was just 2 years too old to be in this tournament.
Yeah.
So,
right.
I mean, 2 years ago when he was in AA, he could have been in this tournament. So
Mexico had a catcher though, who was really good.
Alejandro Kirk.
His defense was outstanding, and he was the best defensive catcher there. He was a shutdown guy. He handled his staff really well, and he was a pretty good bat. I mean, he could hit from both sides and was really good, you know. So he was a guy that could play, you know, in the caliber of players that we're talking about here. But each team had maybe one of those guys,
right.
Where we had every position was that type of player. So that was the stark contrast we're talking about between those guys and
the depth you're talking about.
And that's my point about trying to put together the absolute best team that you can is to try to eliminate any room for error,
right?
You know, because baseball is baseball, and on any given day, one team can beat another team. You know, because it's just how baseball is. One team throws out a pretty good pitcher, and they got a shot. You know, and if a silly run comes across one way or another, you could end up losing. And so you want to do what you. It matters how good your team is to give you an even better shot to win. And that's my. That's my challenge, at least. That's my charge, is I'm going to do everything I can to put together the best team that I possibly can. I'm not going to just approach it like, well, we're the U.S. and, you know, we're going to be better. You know, no, I want to make sure that we are absolutely better in every position that we can.
And that's one of the things that does stand out for this team. This looks like this will be an 18U team that when we look back at this roster 5-10 years from now, it'll be a – wow, look at how many guys were on that team. I mean, this is a team, a lot of people listening to this probably, there's Baseball America fans who know some of these guys already, but a lot of people listening to this may not know about them yet, but they're going to know about them down the road because this was a team, you said, it's physicality, it's tools, and it's a combination of tools and playing ability
and playability,
skills.
Yeah, that's what, and makeup. I was really happy with the makeup of the players on this team in combining with their skills and tools. I think that we'll see that this team had a dozen to 15 first rounders. You know,
there's 20 players on the team. That's
right.
Like,
I know.
Literally that could be that 3/4 of the roster is a first
eventually
round.
Yeah, yeah. whether it's this year or 17, 18 or 19, I could see there being about a dozen guys out of high school that go in the first round. And then if a few of these guys go to college, you know, they very well could end up in the first round as well. It was a really fun team to watch. I mean, you had big tools across the diamond, whether it was 80 runners or 70 power, you know, or 70 arms. I mean, we had, and our outfit was all arms that were above average to well above average. I mean,
there aren't many major league teams that do that on
right,
normal night.
Right. I mean, Mike Ciani was our center fielder. Him and Mike Quentin Holmes platoon some out there because one's left-hand hitter, one's right-hand hitter. And Quentin Holmes is an 80 runner. I mean, he absolutely just glides, and he's got a solid average arm. But Mike Ciani is a 60 runner with a 70 arm at the least. You could even say it's even better than that, you know. Kelnick is a 60 arm, 60 runner, and Royce Lewis is the same, you know. So
You were basically playing outfielders,
right?
You'd be comfortable playing in center.
No doubt. And Cuba recognized that right away, and they were not going to run. They were not going to take an extra base on us, and it was noticeable how afraid they were of the arm strength that our outfielders had. You know, and there wasn't a guy in the outfield that we were trying to hide. You know,
those, right.
All of our outfielders were dynamic players.
So the arm strength wasn't just evident on the mound. It was also in the outfield and in the infield.
And your profile, we've been joking on here as we go through the playoffs and how many non-profile guys there are.
Yeah.
Obviously, this is projection, but you were profile almost across the board.
I mean, we had our third baseman were Hunter Green, and Valade played some third. I mean, Hunter's got an 80 arm as well, and he's got serious raw power. And Ryan Valade, same thing. He's got serious raw power and is a nice defender and can throw. You know, he profiles at third base, and he also played second base, which he can do very well. He can play wherever you want him to. And then Nick Allen is short. I mean, he is so good defensively. It's an out when it's hit to him, and he makes hard plays look easy, and then if he does make a mistake, it's on a seriously hard play that he still made look like he should have made it when most guys would never even had a chance. He's got a 60 arm.
And then you're missing. This is even with an injury because you could have even which
right
again which is crazy. A good problem to have. I don't even know how you'd have basically balanced playing time if you.
Yeah, I mean Bryce Terang is a 2018 very special player, a special kid too. I mean he knows the game. And he's got tools across the board. He could play every position on the diamond probably because he just knows how to play baseball. But he could play shortstop if we wanted him to, and he would have been one of our better center fielders if he had been out there.
On a team that had an 80 runner and a 60 with great instincts.
Exactly. But his ability to hit and to steal bases and to just impact the game at every level is it's really, really fun to watch. He got hurt on a ground ball during BP on the very last day of training, the day before we were going to Mexico. I mean, and he was slotted to be our leadoff hitter and to play second base every game. And ground ball hit a lip, and I hit him in the eye. And we precautionary just said, no, we can't let you play. You got too good of a future. Plus, you could be back on this team again next year, you know. And I mean, to be like selfish about it, I was so disappointed because I was now not going to get to see this kid play for eight more days.
I know your competitiveness. I know you were kicking something around.
The thing is, Ryan Valade played second base, and he's a great player too.
Yeah.
But like just the selfish baseball fan in me,
right,
was like, man, I don't get to watch this kid play the game over the next 9 weeks. And that's how I feel about his ability. I mean, he's just a great baseball player.
Yeah, if Terang hadn't gotten hurt, you had a chance to have just three, it sounds like, epic underclassmen in Terang, Kelenic, and Cassis.
And Ciani.
And Ciani's underclassmen as well.
I mean, all those
2018
guys.
Class, Hudson Belinsky's not here today. We would have had him in this podcast. But Hudson just was texting me yesterday, our draft writer now, about this 2018 class is just as ridiculous. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was talking about guys he saw in Jupiter over the weekend, and like, he's like, I could do a top 10 for 2018, like right now, top of my head. He said, and some of the guys who I like best, there's no way I can put them in the top five.
Right.
So,
no, it's a strong class. I've done a lot of research on it already. Like I said, I want to know the players as well as I possibly can. And I was down in Jupiter as well. I was at Area Code Games and another event, RNTDP, our National Team Development Program. And I feel pretty good about what's out there and how deep the team will be, again, across the board. It's a fun problem to have when you're trying to choose between high caliber first round potential player and high caliber first round potential player, you know, for that last spot, and that's a good problem to have.
I do feel like we should start with let's talk about some of the 2017 guys. We're in the 2017 draft cycle.
Okay.
Obviously, I'm going to ask you to put on a little bit of your scout hat here, but I don't feel like you ever separate one from the other.
Mm-hmm.
Hunter Green is the only member of this class who has been on the cover of our magazine. He was three pictures of him on the cover of the magazine. But Hunter did not pitch for you guys in Mexico. Obviously, you didn't need him, But this is a guy who we've written about as a potential, you know, pitcher who could be the first pick in the 2017 draft, and he as a high school pitcher, and that's never happened before. So
for a right-hander, yeah.
The high school right-hander. So the fact that that's even in play tells you how significant his arm is. You already talked about him at third base, how easy and true his arm strength is over there. It didn't seem like he had a great tournament offensively. He hit .261, 3 extra base hits. He did have 6 RBIs. There's a lot of hype around Hunter Green. Separate the hype from the reality, what you got to see, both when you've seen him in the past. I mean, we were there in San Diego. JJ and I were there with you at the Junior Home Run Derby. He made the finals, did he not? That Junior Home Run Derby at Petco.
He just missed the finals, but he put on a display.
In the first round,
he blew everybody away.
That was easy juice.
Yeah.
So there's a lot. He has flashed a lot of premium tools. It sounds like the one thing he doesn't do is run at a premium level. And so the question of whether he's a hitter or a pitcher down the line is still up in the air.
Yeah, from a scouting perspective, it's very interesting question to have to answer with him.
Because pitching's easy to scout.
Yeah, the pitching, he's got an electric arm. Yeah. And he's got a really good delivery.
Good body.
It's something he repeats. He's got feel for it. He's got secondary stuff. He throws strikes. It's a big, big profile and a lot of projection to him. So he's very, very exciting on the mound. No, he didn't throw for us, but I understand where they were coming from on that. You're trying to be cautious with his arm,
right?
You know, it's commendable, you know, to do that. So, but we still felt that he could help us offensively. Because just like you're talking about, he's got a lot of ability there too. He's a very nice defender. He's got easy, soft hands, instincts, especially at shortstop. I think he's more comfortable at shortstop. He's not a good runner, but it doesn't affect him that much at shortstop.
Sure.
He's got good first step instincts to both sides.
And I think of the top shortstops in the major leagues right now, the young guys, two of them are not guys who are burners in any way, Seager and Correa.
Corey Seager, nobody thought was a shortstop. I mean, he was my area.
Yeah.
Almost drafted him. If the Dodgers had just pulled out one more pick, we would have had him. But he's turned out to be a better shortstop than any scout will ever ever actually have said. I mean, maybe somebody will say that they thought he was a shortstop, but I don't believe him.
He admitted to our Kyle Glazer last issue when he was Rookie of the Year. He's like, yeah, seeing that you guys had me listed at third base in that 2012 draft, that motivated me. That fired him up.
So. But Seager is very similar. It was very similar tools to Hunter in the sense that his hands were outstanding, his instincts were outstanding, and he had a plus arm. Now, Green's got an even better arm than Seager. Seager's arm was 60 to 65. Green's arm is
it's a true 7. It sounds
well
like.
At the minimum.
Yeah,
it's an 80. I mean, he's got a phenomenal arm. So
I just want to remind our listeners, you're just comparing him tool for tool at a similar stage of development to Corey Seager, and yet I think you like him better on the mound.
Well, because Corey Seager's bat is special,
like, right?
And Hunter has the tool of raw power that. Is better than Seager's. Seager didn't have that raw power. Seager was more of a line drive, doubles guy with some power, and he's obviously got power. It just wasn't in his approach, where Hunter can launch more balls, especially, you know, in batting practice, you know, over the fence. So it's just going to come down to, do the scouts think he's that kind of hitter?
Yeah.
And I think that's still to be determined. He played well for us. For the most part. I mean, his numbers don't reflect quite as well as he played for us offensively. And during trials, he went on a tear for a few days that really solidified himself as
being
one of our offensive guys. And he had a couple really big hits for us. He had a big hit for us in the Nicaragua game, I believe, and he had one in the first Cuba game that both of those, I think they were doubles, and one to left field, one to right field, And those were huge hits for us. He got jammed in, I think it was the third to last game, and his thumb swore, not jammed, but his thumb got bruised.
Okay.
And I think that affected his ability to really put some thump into the ball from that point on. And I think that affected him a little bit. So that may be reflected in the numbers, but
I think it's still pretty
impressive.
Pleased.
Yeah. I was pleased with the way that he played. I mean, he played in 7 of our 8 games, and we probably wouldn't have won the Cuba game without him, and maybe not the Nicaragua game either. So, I think very highly of his ability to impact the game, both on the mound and in the field.
The thing that also stood out, you talked about the arms that you had on this team. The guy that jumps out from that is that it seemed like Hans Kraus was the guy. Not that you guys didn't have a lot of choices, but Hans Kraus was kind of the moment of truth guy. Is that a fair thing to say?
Yeah, we threw him the first game. The thing that we knew going in was that velocity is not something that these teams are used to seeing.
And Hans Kraus has velocity.
and not just velocity, but big velocity, like big-time velocity. And he had the biggest velocity of anybody, and he had improved over the last year his ability to throw strikes. And when we realized that, okay, this guy can throw strikes with his fastball, he's going to be reliable. So we threw him out there against Panama in the first game, and he realized at the very beginning, he's a smart kid, and he's a competitor, and he realized right away that these guys had no shot against his fastball. And he threw only fastballs the entire game.
And I love that.
And he didn't even throw as hard as he could. He was preserving himself. I think he was sitting 91 to 94 that day, and he was pitching to contact, you know, which was impressive to me.
That's a huge, mature
exactly.
step.
That's my point.
We hear so much about this current generation of players who are showcase players and only pitch to the radar gun, and to hear a story like that about
he didn't care. I mean, his outing before that was at Texas, and against the University of Texas, and he was fired up for that game, and obviously those players are more advanced and physical guys, and he came out and was 95 and 99, and he was hitting 99 multiple times in the first inning, and the hitters literally had no chance. They were swinging when the ball was hitting the mitt, and that was awesome to see. So we're like, okay, we're going to throw him out against Panama, and he's going to blow him away. Well, he did blow him away, but he did it in a different way. He knew that he could overpower them. He pitched to contact. He kept his pitch count down. I think he threw 5 innings, and he maybe only struck out 1 guy, and he didn't miss many barrels. But that was after I watched it. He was like, that was intentional. Right. And I talked to him about it afterwards, and I was like, you know, threw only fastballs. He goes, yeah. He said they had no chance against me, and I was just trying to.
Why throw something else where they actually right. have a chance to?
So then we go into the Cuba, and this is a good story. Going into that day, we weren't sure who we were going to start. You know, we were thinking about, should we start Nick Prado because he's got a lot of experience in pitching in a gold medal game.
Gold medal winner as the previous year
right.
at the 18 U team right. as an undergrad.
Do we want to start him?
Underclassman.
Or, you know, do we got so there'd be a really cool or tough mix of Prado throwing, you know, upper 80s with multiple pitches and locating.
Feel.
And then bring in this big righty and throwing really hard, and the contrast between those two guys was going to mess up Cuba, we thought. But then we started thinking about it even more, and we were like, you know what? Let's just put Kraus out there, you know, and see how far he can go. And we told him that the night before, we told the team that he was going to be Prado. And then the next morning, we talked to Prado and said, what do you think if we go to Kraus? And he was like, I think it's a great idea. Not because he didn't want the ball, but I think he knew, you know, that Kraus was ready. And when we brought Kraus down to talk to him and we told him, like, the fire in his eyes, he just lit up. And that told me a lot about him. Mm-hmm. Like, he wanted the ball so bad, and he went out there and he shoved, and he was throwing hard. And in Cuba, by the second time through the lineup, well, he had a perfect game going through 4, I believe. And when they started coming around the second and third time, they were just trying to bunt. They were trying to get hit. They were trying to take walks. And
just like anything, because they knew they weren't.
They knew they weren't going to put the ball in play. And through 7 innings, I think they had 1 hit, and it was a excuse me, little flare to right field, you know. And we were completely comfortable. Now in the 8th inning, he got a little bit tired. He walked a couple of guys. We brought in Jordan Butler, who just slammed the door right shut. But so we weren't sure. Was Kraus just going to go 3 innings, 4 innings, and then have to go to somebody else? Or, you know, we had Shane Baz available. We were ready to go to him. We had Logan Allen in the pen. We were loaded. We didn't have to play a game the day before in the semifinals because of the rain. So we were loaded up, and we had all of our horses ready to roll. We didn't need them because Kraus pitched into the eighth. And, you know, it's unfortunate for some other kids didn't get to pitch quite as much, but, hey, you win a gold medal, you win a gold medal. And,
right.
And that's what the whole team bought into that, and nobody was disappointed. I mean, it was really fun to watch Kraus compete the way he did. And he was fired up after every inning and punching guys out. I mean, that game, his approach was, I'm going to punch you out. It wasn't, I'm just going to cruise here and save my arm. It was, this is the last game. I'm gonna punch you out, and he did.
It's pretty special, I think, for a Southern California kid who's probably started pitching games that really mattered to him in like in January, February, and here in October 9th, end of a long year where he's probably gotten up, gotten down, you know, these kind of things. He had his best for last when you guys needed it. There's a lot of positives in that report on Hans Kraus.
No question. And really,
plus his name is Hans Kraus. I mean, come on, it's fun.
Yeah, I mean, and for the most part, that's what we saw out of all of our guys. I mean, I had confidence in all of our guys, and when we were trying to decide who to throw against what teams, you know, when we decided, you know, whether it was Blaine Inlow, who was probably the second best starter performer for us,
it's not Kraus's 99, but he has legit stuff himself.
Obviously. Oh, no doubt. He's a plus fastball, and he's got a legit breaking ball as well. And he's a competitor and has a lot of upside to him. So if I'm a scout, you know, I'm very excited about him. But I mean, he dominated Mexico. He dominated the other game he pitched, and I think he threw probably the second most innings.
Dana Hills High, where Hans Kraus goes, yeah. By the way. Now this is Peter Tago's old high school. This is Merrick Kraus, is that his older brother? Do you know?
I'm not sure.
I shouldn't have put you on the spot. Yeah. I know Lucas Williams of the Phillies, the third round pick at high school too. That's,
they put in some other guys words, out.
Yeah, Tanner Shepherds went there. So this is a program that's had guys before. I mean, this is not. This guy's has been on the radar, and he's. I think that's another part about a lot of these guys, Matt, have been scrutinized and were scrutinized again here and played well under that scrutiny. Royce Lewis is another guy you mentioned earlier, you touched on before. I mean, a shortstop with electric tools, it sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what position he'll end up playing. I think
because he can play a lot.
He can play a lot of positions. He's an uber athlete, quick twitch. He got
again. Jay Sarah Catholic High is a guy who's not some Johnny come lately.
Right. No.
Didn't come out of nowhere.
He played on a national team, 15 and under. He's been around, and when I've gotten – this is my first year getting to know him, and what a joy to be around that kid. He's a really special kid on and off the field. He's got unbelievable talent. He could play a lot of positions.
Right.
He could end up in the outfield,
right.
but he also maybe ends up at second base or third base.
And this is a guy who's got a chance to be a single-digit draft pick next year. I mean, like he – struck out none and walked 8 times for you guys. He hit 500 in this tournament.
You know what was really fun to watch with him was he really, from the first day we saw him at the Tournament of Stars as a group, I'd seen him before that, but he got better and better and better and better throughout the entire summer. He was really good at the Under Armour game. He had a home run.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was the MVP of the PGs game. He got to our trials. And he played well at our trials. And then he got to our training, and he played well, but he wasn't getting hits because it was unfortunate. And he stuck with it, and he stuck with it. And then we got down there. Something came alive in him. The competition fueled him, which was really, really fun. It was invigorating to watch because he knew that he was the best player on the field. And the pitcher had no shot against him, and he hit 500, and his outs were loud outs, and he knew, and he battled those pitchers. You know, if he got a pitch that he couldn't handle or wasn't, he fouled it off. You know, until he got his pitch, and then he hit something hard, and he dominated the game, and he's such a nice kid off the field that sometimes you're like, I wonder. He's just a really nice kid. On the field, he's not. I mean, he is a competitor, and he's diving for balls. He's stealing bases. He's screaming and excited, and all that all comes from a really good place. I mean, he's an exceptional player, and he's an even better person off the field. So I mean, it's a really nice combination that you're getting there out of that guy. I think his ceiling, I mean, his projection and his ceiling from a scout's point of view is through the roof.
It's like, I mean, there's, you know about the speed, as you said. I mean, you got the defense, you've got the hitting ability, but there's power there. There's power potential there too, is there not?
Well, power now and even more in the future. I mean, he's going to be a really physical kid. I mean, I'm if I was grading him out, I would put a plus grade on his power, and you could go really as high as you want. I mean,
again, five tool gets thrown around too much, but
he's a five tool guy.
I mean, there's literally no below average tool on the card.
No, he's a five tool guy. I mean, he'll have to continue to improve his ability to hit, like all kids will. But
right, there's no 17-year-old who grades as a 50 president.
Right, exactly. But I know that he's got hit tools, and I know he's got the mind for it, and the hand-eye coordination, the bat speed, the strength, the swing, and he's a competitor. He's not afraid.
You had some other kind of quote-unquote famous, but I like to use that word now, guys who were already famous before they got to this USA team, at least in scouting circles. The favorite story that I heard, we talked about this off-air, was Hagen Danner being on this team as a relief pitcher or as a pitcher, but also having catching in his back pocket, mm-hmm. and that he wound up with his familiarity with Hans Kraus, some other players being banged up behind the plate for you with Patrick Bailey, one of your other catchers, that you guys wound up using Hagen Danner behind the plate in the gold medal game.
It's a great story.
And he came through for you with flying colors. Yeah. I'm going to leave you with JJ for the rest of this, but I want to make sure I ask you the Hagen Danner question while I go pick up my kids. Thank you, Matt, for joining us. But talk about Hagen Danner some, because this story is awesome.
Yeah, first of all, Hagen's he's a really tough kid.
Part of a Huntington Beach program that basically competes at an elite level every year,
all the way down to Little League. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's not a moment that is too big for him to process, and he won a Little League World Series. He's played on national teams before. He's won gold medals before.
Been here for an NHSI also.
Yep. He wins the NHSI. He caught on the from the national team last year in the gold medal game, even when he was somewhat hurt. And we had him on the team this year. We weren't exactly sure what his role was going to be, but we knew he could help us in a lot of ways. And he didn't get to pitch as much as we thought he was going to. But we kept holding him out of catching because we knew we might need him on the mound, and we wanted to keep his arm fresh. We let him get a couple of pinch hit at bats. He had a home run in one. I think he had a double in another. And he showed well every time we gave him a chance. And then we got to that gold medal game, and we knew, okay, well, he's not going to pitch anymore.
You're loaded with arms.
Yeah, so we didn't need to save him for that. Patrick Bailey took a bat to the back of the hand a few games earlier and just wasn't himself receiving wise. And that's one of the things that we love about him was his ability to catch and block. And so that kind of limited his ability. And, MJ Melendez was an option as well. And he played fine. It wasn't anything against MJ. It was just that Hagen had shown a little more offensive ability, and he had caught in a big game before, and he had familiarity with Hans Kraus. And we asked Hans as well, so what do you think? And he said, I like Hagen. I pitched him before. Let's do it.
And that familiarity is a big thing.
It was big. And the story I was telling was, this was a decision that the coaches made. It's somewhat of a risky decision. He didn't catch any games for us before that. And now we're just throwing him in there in the gold medal game. And in the first inning, we're the home team, and the throw down to second base, and he airmails it, over the second baseman's head. And, we're kind of looking around like, okay. And, there were no throws in the first inning. And the second inning comes around, and he's throwing down to second base, and he does it again, airmails the second baseman. And I was like, oh, what have we done? Then he comes up to hit.
Like I said, the good news is Hans Kraus was not allowing any base runners.
Right. Nobody's getting on base, so we're surviving. And to be honest, he was doing a great job in the game. He caught everything. He blocked everything. He didn't make any mistakes. But he came up in his first at-bat with runners on second and third. And the score was 0-0. And he drove a ball up the middle, a base hit, and drove in the first two runs of the game. And that's what we were looking for. We were looking for that capability, and he started the game off for us. He got us on the board and got us moving in the right direction. And with the way the Kraus was throwing, as soon as we got those runs, we felt really comfortable. And he just did a great job, and he stayed in the whole game, and it ended up being a really cool thing that to see him persevere throughout the week and not get as many opportunities as maybe he would have liked, but to stay in it and stay in it and stay in it. And then when the time came to help the team, he came through. And that was really, really cool to see. And it's a really good story for those, on a team ever.
I mean, that's what I was going to say. That's something that you'll be telling that story
sure.
two, three years down the road to other guys. It's like, hey, be ready for your moment.
Be ready at any time. No, I mean, would you rather play and be guaranteed to not win, or would you rather not play and win? And when your time does come to play, be ready to play. Because if you're pouting and if you're upset that you're not playing, well, then when your time does come, you're not going to be ready. You're not going to be able to produce. And he was ready. He stayed ready. He was eager. He wanted to play. And as soon as he got that opportunity, he took advantage of it.
3 for 4, 2 doubles, a home run, 6 RBIs, 3 runs scored, and 2 walks. So basically 750, 833, 2000.
Yeah.
That's being ready for your moment.
No doubt. I mean, he didn't get nearly the at-bats that the other guys did, but
He made every one of them count.
He made them all count. And part of the reason he didn't get as many at-bats is because we were saving him on the mound.
Right.
We had other guys that could do it.
He's a legit pitcher, too. I mean,
That's probably his future. I mean, he got a great arm, and he's got good secondary stuff, and he's got feel. I mean, he's just a great kid on both sides. I mean, I have nothing. There's nothing I could say negatively about him.
I don't want to get away from the 17s, but it is one of the things that's notable because you talk about Hagen Danner did this last year, and you have multiple guys on this team mm-hmm. who very well could be the anchors of the next year's team. And in Tristan Casas, you've got a guy, first baseman, who also pitched, who's 90-plus off the mound as a rising sophomore, which is insane in some
right.
ways. But who's already there. I mean,
our underclassmen.
Jared Kelenic is
our underclassmen were really exciting. They were toolsy across the board. They were physical, and they impacted the game for us, all of them, all four of them.
Casas
hit a home run the first day. That hit almost left the entire stadium, not just over the fence. I mean, it was a bomb, and he hit in the middle of our order. He impacts the game. I mean, he knows how to hit. He got a great approach, as advanced approach as you'll see from a high school kid. Even I don't care if he's 16, 17, or 18. His approach is professional, and he's got serious power, and he knows how to use the whole field, and he lays off of borderline pitches, and he doesn't let bad things affect him. I mean, he's a special hitter, and he's a pretty good first baseman. And like you said, he could pitch, and he saved us some innings in some games where we were trying to save pitchers for later, and that was valuable as well.
And then Kelenic was really one of your most consistent hitters day in, day out throughout the entire tournament.
For the tournament, yeah, he was great. I mean, he settled in, and he was similar to Royce in the sense that he was much better than his opponent, and he hit for some serious damage. I think it was 2 doubles, 2 triples, and a home run.
A home run, and
the home run coming in the gold medal game, which was just the cap of he was just capping off his entire maturation process from day one to that day. I mean, he came a long ways and learned a lot about the game, and his skill set is special. I mean,
a Wisconsin kid.
Yeah.
This is not a California kid,
nope.
Warm weather, or Florida, nope. Georgia, anything like that.
Right.
Wisconsin kid who
yep.
is
strong.
Ahead of his
yeah.
age group.
He's ahead of his age group ability-wise. And maybe because Wisconsin, he hasn't played quite as much. So he's learning how to play the game, how to approach the game. And to his credit, he's a great kid who wants to be good, who wants to win, who wants to be a teammate, and he wants all that stuff really, really bad. And he's learning how to harness all of that desire and energy in a good way. And that's something that he was able to do when we got to Mexico. And I mean, he can do everything. I mean, he can run. He got a plus arm. He's got serious raw power. He can hit. He's a very nice outfielder. Could probably even play center field if
right.
he needed
but
him
prototypical,
to.
Like, I mean,
prototypical right fielder. And he can pitch. I mean, he's 90-92 on the mound with a really good changeup. He doesn't throw breaking balls, but he's got a really good changeup, and he throws strikes. Now, he's more of a one-inning type guy, but that lefty out of the pen is pretty valuable. And, you know, that was part of the reason why, you know, he was so desired to be on the team. But I mean, I again, like, he's a special talent, and I see really good things in his future, because I think that mentally he thinks it all comes from a good place, and he's gonna learn how to harness that positive energy that he has.
And then Nick Allen, who, I mean, again, on a team that was loaded. There's something about being a shortstop and being the shortstop that, you know, you know, everyone basically in the dugout knew if the ball's hit to him,
he's out.
It's out.
Yeah.
And this is a guy, but
he's a true shortstop, and he knows how to play the position. He's got feel and instincts for the hitters. He can read where he needs to set up. He controls his other fielders and tries to get them in position. He knows hops. He knows he needs to attack the ball. He's got a plus arm, which from his size, you know, it's almost
startling.
Yeah,
he's not a big...
No, but he can run. He can throw. He's got great hands. He makes electric plays. He makes hard plays look easy. You know what? He can hit, too.
I was going to say, this is not a guy who's...
No.
You bury it at the bottom of the lineup.
No, he's our leadoff hitter the entire time. And
9 for 9 on steals.
Yeah,
he hit 345, 346.
He knows that, and it's something that he works with. He works on that. His approach has to be line drives. He's got to keep it out of the air. And
power is the one thing that he's not going to have. But
he doesn't
fine.
Need it. He doesn't need it. I mean, because he can drive the ball in the gaps. He's not weak by any means. It's just not his best chance is not going to be to hit the ball. Lofty. I mean, hitting the ball in the air is okay, but
right.
like on a line, but he doesn't need to try to be hitting the ball out. And
everyone
and okay.
trades off. I mean,
yeah.
Hitting power, for with the very few exceptions, hitting power is something where, okay, if a guy wants to, with his approach, hit for more power, you can trade off some hit for power.
Sure.
In his case, he would be trading off a whole lot of hit, and that's his
right.
for a little bit of power.
Right.
He's smart enough to not do that.
Right. He's a real smart kid, and he loves to play, and he's a he's a grinder, and he's a competitor, and he takes it very seriously. I mean, he everything, his prep before the game, everything he does intentionally, and he works really hard, and it's fun to watch him play. I mean, from a scouting point of view, they're going to be split camp on him just purely on his size, and you know, that's unfortunate for him.
Right, but
that's the one thing is that
a high school shortstop that size, sometimes teams do kind of look at that and say,
sure.
you know what, we want to see you do it in college too.
I tell you what, he may be short, but he's not weak.
Mm-hmm.
He's a strong kid. He's worked really hard at that, and I think his size just limits maybe his power potential, but I know he can play shortstop. And at
the same time, though, shortstops like that very rarely get through to college baseball.
Right. Right. So it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, I think teams will recognize, you know, his value, and, you know.
And they've gotten a lot of good looks at him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
A lot of good looks.
I mean, he's, you know, there's a lot to like there. So it'll come down to, you know, ultimately what team likes him the most and if that fits into his plans, you know, whether it's college or pro. But I know one thing, he loves to play the game of baseball, and he's good at it, and whatever team he's on is better because he's on it.
Again, this team had a lot of strengths. Did you feel like, because of where the outfield was a strength, I mean, really there wasn't a big weakness, but the outfield strength, but was it the depth of arms? Like, if you said what was the biggest thing that you guys had over everyone else in this tournament was...
It was everything.
Yeah.
It was everything. I mean, yeah, the depth of arms was good, but when you looked on the field...
You had the advantage there,
at every position, except for like against Mexico, their catcher was on par with us, right? Their shortstop was a very nice defender, but he wasn't nearly the hitter that Allen was. And Allen was better than their guy. Now, he was on par. He could have played on our team defensively. But across the board, every position, we overpowered the other teams. And that was it was really startling to see. Like, wow, like this is what we're bringing to the table.
And that's got to be, I mean, again, you already are at work now on doing this again next year. And again, the stage gets bigger next year.
Yep.
You add in, you know, you basically, it's the world championships. It's not, you're not worried about just North, you know, about the Americas. When you're looking at that, I mean, one of the things that jumps out is that you, I mean, this is what you, this went according to plan. But the tough thing about that is okay, as you said, that's just, okay, now let's do it again.
Right. Well, so now the goal is to find the best players we can possibly find, but also instill in them, which I thought we did a really good job this year of this, was instill in them that this is a team and that we have play together as a team, and this is not a showcase.
And the tough thing about that is that you are talking about this is a 20-man roster. There's only 20 guys cannot play every game.
No doubt.
There's no way. You basically are taking guys who have been the best player on almost every team they've ever played on, and they're having to turn into role players in some cases.
Right. And that's a difficult task, and that's...
But it's also useful because that's something they're going to have to learn to adjust to.
No.
In your pro ball, everyone was the best player on their high school team.
Right. Yeah, and that's just part of the process, and... I'm trying to start that process earlier and earlier, even before they even make the team. You know, I'm trying to get out there and talk with players and families, and we do development camps, and we're trying to improve that aspect of baseball in general, but you know, especially you know at the national team level. So that is our challenge. You know, we do have the best group of players. The challenge is, can we get them to come together and play for that month as a team and try to collectively go win something together and not just showcase their abilities.
Right. And the thing about this is, as you said, the talent level is such, you maybe can win that way.
Right.
You know, if you basically
maybe.
Just, right.
But you also might lose. I mean,
but you know that you have a much better chance of winning. If everyone
and it's baseball, and and you want to eliminate as much of the doubt as you possibly can, because anybody can win on any particular day.
And there is the other part of it that this is the U.S. national team. If that's something that is instilling, that's helping players develop that, which we are talking about the next stars of the game as well. I mean, you look at USA Baseball over the years, and we are talking about many of the future stars. You know, that's where one of the ways that they kind of first hit the national and international stage. There's something beneficial for the players as well. That's a lesson if you don't have it yet, you need to have at some point.
The players that play in this program, whether it's the trials on to the national team, all 40 of those guys, and then the guys that make the team, they get an experience that they really never had before. I mean, they play some travel ball. They try to win a tournament here or there. But this deal,
there's a difference between wearing nothing against the travel ball teams, but wearing wearing whatever know your travel team name is, and USA.
Yeah, I think Chris Oakey was on this team a couple times and was a big part of it, and he coined a phrase that stuck with the program, that we leave as teammates, but we return as brothers, and that's the experience that we're talking about. The kids. Come together in almost as the enemy when we get to these other countries, because we're the team that everybody's trying to beat, and nobody wants us to win, and
you want to be that, because the reality is that's because you keep winning,
and so we come together.
Cuba used to be that, because I mean that's where you want to take that title
from. And we it's us against the world, literally, and if we want to win, we have to eliminate anything that's negative and be productive with everything that we do, and that's been our goal, and I think that we did it pretty well this year, and I think we're off to a good start to do that again next year.
again, the process never stops. It's now, you know, I was going to say, because right now you're building a list of 100. Is that the first cut? You know, like basically the TOS invite roster?
We're working on that right now. The number might get a little smaller next year. But ultimately, we whittle it down to 40 for the trials. And the tournament stars will be somewhere between 75 and 100 kids. And once we get out of the tournament stars, it's down to 40. And then from there, it's down to 20.
I mean, the whole part of it, it's fun looking at it from the outside also, because it is. It's great talent, and it's also players with great talent who are learning to play together, basically, and you're building a team. It's fun to watch.
Yeah, and you're also, the coaching staffs that we put together have been really, really good. The players, the experience that they're getting with these coaches is at an elite level. I mean, this year we had former major leaguers at our trials. Our trials coaches were David Eckstein and Andy Stankiewicz, both who played shortstop in the major leagues for double-digit years, just about together. And Scott Bankhead, who was a major league pitcher and pitched on a collegiate national team. We had Mark Ross, who's a former major league pitcher and now a scout. Gerald Laird, who caught in the major leagues forever.
And USA Baseball Day.
And won a World Series with the Cardinals in 2011. Thank you, Gerald.
Yeah, I was going to say, you have a soft spot there.
Well, yeah, I have a
fellow member of the
Cardinals. I have a ring, you know, thanks to his team. And then Greg Ritchie is a hitting coach, who's a former major league hitting coach, and he is on a different level when it comes to hitting. So the instruction and the tutelage that those guys are giving to these players is just at a different level than what they're getting anywhere else. And that's something I'm really proud of, and something that I want to continue to do with this program.
But, well, again, Matt, congratulations on year one.
Thank you.
Now I just got to go out and do it again in year two.
Absolutely.
And year three.
Absolutely.
And year four. You know.
That's the goal.
But we do appreciate the time.
Absolutely.
We could literally do this for, 4 hours. I don't want to hold you, and we'll break down every player. We may have you back to, okay, now we'll do prospects number, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Because, again, this is a team, if you just go to, just look at the stats from this, there's a lot of guys that we're going to be looking at for years from this and go, wow,
I think we'll have a lot of guys from this team that'll be in contention for the 2020 Olympic team, which is exciting to think about. This could be a core that goes to Japan and tries to win a gold medal.
And who has the experience of having played together, which is never a bad thing.
Right. So that's,
I mean, that's always been a tough thing.
That's something exciting about this group. We talked about that as a group, and I think that if that could happen, it would be a good thing, and it's really exciting to think about.
The only thing that could mess that up is some of these guys are so good that they may
maybe
speed their clock up too fast.
Maybe. I mean, you're talking about 4 years from now, a couple of them maybe.
Right.
Yeah, but the majority of them should be right in that wheelhouse.
Right, it's just in the wheelhouse because, if you think about, we were talking about Corey Seager.
Double A.
You talk about that 2012 class.
Yep.
That's basically the 2012 say, okay, if it had been the 2016 Olympics.
Right.
Well, 2016, that would have been right at the time where it would have been Seager's in Double A, you can have him.
Right, exactly. These guys that were on this team, I mean, hopefully they're the core that goes and wins a gold medal. If you lose one or two
because they're already in the big leagues,
I'm sure somebody else will come around, but
that is a great way of thinking of it. And it's also, that is a great way to wrap it up. Just for USA Baseball as a whole, the fact that baseball is going to be back in the Olympics, that's significant in many ways also, because it is something where international tournaments, World Baseball Classic's one thing, but the Olympics is something, there's been a void there of that being gone.
I agree.
And now,
baseball should be in the Olympics. There's no question.
Yes,
it's one of the major sports in the world.
If ballroom dancing is the Olympics, then we should definitely have baseball in the Olympics.
Exactly.
And especially with being in Japan.
Right. And that's a great thing for the U.S., and it's a great platform for USA Baseball and for just our entire scope of what we do, and we're excited about it.
As Baseball America, we're excited about it too. Yeah. But Matt,
all right,
it's been great to catch up again.
Thank you,
and thank you everyone for the download here. We'll be back, as we've been doing all week, with another Baseball America podcast.
This concludes our program. Want more in-depth baseball coverage? Be a better fan. Visit BaseballAmerica.com to get more comprehensive baseball coverage.